Here we are again at another episode of Creator's Playbook. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey.
Thanks for joining me on another episode. It's so good to have you around.
So glad to be here.
Good. I'm so glad you're glad to be here. I'm glad too.
Yay, we're all glad.
This is a Talay Studios production. Thank you guys for joining us at Talay Studios. And we'll see you next week.
Yay. That was really great, Robbie. I had a great time.
It was so good. I learned so much. Can't wait to see what you guys make, guys.
Okay. So what are we guys, here for, Robbie?
Guys, we are talking about turning point when your life takes a sudden, abrupt, and different change in life and what you do and how you live and how you choose to live. Here we go.
Cool. So turning points, is this the same as a midlife crisis?
I think that might be a catalyst to a turning point in a life. Not necessarily the turning point itself, because I know lots of people that can have a...
And I was
actually,
like,
I don't know anyone that's had it.
I've had several midlife crises in my 30s. I'm like, I'm not technically middle-aged. I don't know if it counts.
I think they call them quarter life crisis.
Are they quarter life crisis?
I think that's what they call it.
All right. Like, so I had one at 30-ish. I guess I'm due to have one again in another 10 years. And then at 75, is that how it works?
A 3-4 life crisis. Yep.
Then there's that time in your 20s. And then there's that time when you're a teenager and... It just never ends.
So when you reach 100, is that like a full life crisis?
Like, what did I do with my life?
What have I done? It's been 100 years.
It's all flashing back.
The one regret he has is he did not get all of the Pokemon. Because at that point, there's going to be like 3,000 Pokemon Go, probably.
I did finally get all the, is it Kanto is the first one on Pokemon Go?
I can't remember, Sarah.
It's like, I've been playing the game. But I do have the first 100.
You should know this.
I have the first 150, so I will not die without regret. I will have you know.
Oh, hey, you know what? That's where the whole song started. Got to catch them all.
I am
was
trying.
With the 150, so you did it.
No, because they keep adding regions, and I keep meeting new evolutions.
That's true. Do they have that? I don't even know. I guess if they kept playing that theme song. Well, the catch line is still there in every season and region, so what does it matter? Well, turning points, I find, are something we can all relate to. And I think it's a mechanic that's really hard to differentiate from literally any genre. Because as I was studying this, literally the point of almost every story is there's some kind of turning point.
Some kind
in the
of
story.
Crisis.
Yeah.
A change. At least hopefully of some sort.
Right. You create and establish a situation, and then you have what would be called in literary terms or movie terms, an inciting incident. And this is really like bumps people off the road and sends them wayward in a new direction. And it's exciting for us as a reader. We get a premise and then we get sent someplace else and excitement brews.
It's also a catalyst for really great character development as well.
Exactly.
I mean, nothing's more disappointing than going to a movie or watching a show and realizing the main character never changed. Like, you want that change. You want that growth. And these turning points are great moments of growth, both literary and in our own real lives.
This is going to be a pretty simple, direct episode. And to give some context to the whole situation I'm trying to paint here, you know, obviously a turning point exists in every story. So think of this more in terms of how a person lives currently and how they switch to a new style of life. And I think the biggest example you see, or rather the biggest trope you see with this example that I'm giving, is someone who works a desk job, gives up their desk job, and suddenly becomes an archaeologist or a businessman or a movie maker, or they find the love of their life. For some reason, desk jobs are villainized as these terrible, terrible things.
I think it's the classic 9-to-5, day in, day out, don't get enough respect.
Right. It's one of those things.
Which is, you know, sad because they are very, you know, like desk jobs are a very credible employment.
Yeah.
We should not demonize them, but yeah, they do get demonized sometimes.
I work a desk job and I love my desk job. I adore it. And so I'm just like, come on, guys. Let's go easy on the desk jobs. So understanding that, that's kind of what we're going here. That feeling of a turning point that we could really be applied or used anywhere, right? So in order to help us along, we kind of need to break this down into three steps in order to tell the story. And it's all of what you would expect in really telling any story, which is you need to state where life is currently for that person, how they live, their general perspective on life, the challenges that they face, and their current hopes and dreams for the future. Then, of course, the next step is the big life event that occurs, the inciting incident. Did someone pass away in the family? Did they watch a YouTube video that encourages them to go get into knitting, like knitting adventures, whatever that entails or whatever that is. I don't know what a knitting
the
adventure
ultimate
is.
Blanket to give us cuddles.
Maybe the ultimate blanket.
The ultimate blanket. You're wrong on so many levels.
I'm just confused.
Never mind. Never mind.
I was thinking like maybe they go and they extract cotton from man-eating cotton trees or bushes. It's a knitting adventure. It's from scratch. They have to go harvest the cotton.
I think your wife would be all over that.
She would be. My wife would look pretty awesome wielding like two sword
she is an incredible knitting hooks.
And she like dives in there like slashing the cotton off, knitting it at the same time. Knitting blades. There we go. Crochet
the power
blades.
Of the knitting needle. Here to save mankind from intergalactic alien plants that threaten to cover the earth in cotton shields of gauze and block the sunset.
What's going on? I love this idea. I love the knitting army versus the killer man-eating plants. This is a post-apocalyptic movie I'd go see. Mm-hmm. Great B-movie material.
And the online website notes that will be tagged onto the movie are knitting patterns so that you too can protect the earth.
Oh my gosh.
Intergalactic aliens threatening to cover the earth in gauze.
The whole point of the movie is just to sell a knitting website with patterns. Or is that a crochet thing?
Oh,
I don't know.
No, it's a diabolical plan to get everyone obsessed with knitting and crochet.
Oh, I like it. I got you. It's like brainwashing.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it. Well, after we've had this major crocheting man-eating event, the final thing is, what is the new direction? What is that lifestyle change? Is it they've now gone down the path of doing what they've always wanted to do? Or is it something they didn't know they always wanted and it caught them by surprise? Or perhaps my personal favorite, they meet a love interest, which invites them into a new lifestyle that they've never known they wanted. Mostly a lifestyle next to the side of their love. So as you can see, there's so many different directions. And to get us started, to really get the brain juices rolling, I've prepared for us a prompt.
Yay.
Please, Sarah, please calm down. I'm gonna knock me off my groove. All right, here we go. Tom wiped another handful of crawler guts from his helmet, strings of green muck trailing from the visor to his hands as he did. He hated crawler guts. They stuck to all unseemly places, required grade 2 acid just to wash off, and permanently stained a perfectly clean power armor suit that he had just polished yesterday. Right at that moment, a large 10-foot-tall bug-like crawler burst from the ground in front of him, chortling and roaring, spraying him with neon pink acid. In a flash of blue and orange, it exploded, dousing him in another fresh coat of crawler guts. His job had been a little more exciting before they had installed all the automated laser turrets. Now he mostly babysat the perimeter of the colony, giving the forest line a good squint before falling asleep standing up. Back in the day, he and his comrades would be fighting deep into the night, guns spraying down crawler after crawler, hour after hour, and returning home to shouts of honor and praise from the colonists, from yet another day safe from alien life. Now he spent most of his time watching reruns of Space Rockers, all 14 seasons, again and again. The most exciting thing he had experienced in the last year was the arrival of the new flavor of Mega Chips, Double Ranch Space Blast, so spicy it makes a crawler's face sour at the bite. Tom didn't know if that was true, but they were pretty spicy. As he stood up, the sun rose with him, its light slicing into the skies and signaling the end to another work night. For the first time in 8 hours, the ground finally stopped rumbling as the nocturnal buggy creatures returned to their nests for a good day's sleep. At least someone would be getting some. On his way back to base to clean up, he flipped back to his place in Space Rockers and let the automated suit feature walk him all the way home.
So was he doing this whole thing in an automated suit?
Pretty much. It implies that a lot of what he does is automated.
So it's kind of like almost like a tiny mecha type thing?
Yeah, yeah. I think like a suit of armor, like Iron Man.
A robotic armor.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like an exoskeleton that he can control.
Exactly. Exoskeleton is precisely the term.
Yay.
So he wears a suit of armor, mm-hmm. and most of the bug slaying is done for him by all kinds of automated defenses.
Okay, so was he climbing through ducts? Because when you said ducts, I actually thought of a duck that you've...
Did I say a duck? Where did I say duck?
I don't know. Maybe
Where did I say ducks?
I swear, like in the beginning, like...
I feel like somehow space ducks should be involved in the life-turning event. He's fighting giant space ducks that spew pink neon acid.
That quack in the night.
That quack in the night.
Covered in grease.
Each quack brings a spray of death upon its prey.
Yes. Okay. So we got this dude, exoskeleton of sorts, cleaning stuff. Is he was he cleaning a space swamp?
I think you're getting mixed up as he was just wiping the acid muck off of his visor, Sarah. He was just taking his hand and wiping it off. That's all he did.
This is when we learned that I have focus problems. And I mean,
I never strictly said that he was defending a colony, but it is implied that that's what he's doing, is defending a colony from crawlers. I mean, you picked up on that much, right?
Yes, I did. So we got dude, and he's doing some kind of cleanup. What is he doing?
Well, according to you, he's cleaning up something and fighting off. He's cleaning up space ducks.
I just thought he's hired space ducks. I heard space bugs. Okay, big giant space bugs.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, okay. And now my brain is like, okay, I think I need to hear the story again. But that's okay.
Should we just do that? Do you just want me to tell you the story again, really quick?
Just sum it up.
Okay, for the audience, this is going to be a little confusing because I'm going to skip this because you guys were paying attention, I hope. Now it'll be Sarah's turn. Then there'll be a brief pause and then we'll come back. Now, Sarah, that you've caught up, does that make a little more sense?
Yes. And for those who do not understand, there was an edit where Robbie had to repeat this prompt for me.
I reread it. Good, Sarah. And guys, I had to still reread parts. After we read
I got cut up on the ranch chips being sour and spicy.
He made a sour face.
For the ranch chips. All right. So we got dude, mecha armor, defending the space colony. That's what I'm calling it. From alien bugs, life forms.
Precisely. And in our three steps, remember, part one, we established mm-hmm. his current state in life, where he's at. Two, what is the inciting incident? What's the event that causes him to change directions? And three, what is the new direction he takes? That's all we have to do. So now we've established what that setting is, but let's elaborate on it. Okay. Let's dive a little deeper. Clearly, this man doesn't like his job anymore. He loved defeating space crawlers when it was, hard.
It kind of sounded like, though, that they go home and they get celebrated, right? So it seems like it's not a thankless job.
Well, it used to be before the automated machines came in. He said he back in the day.
Back in the day. Okay. So now he feels like he's just going through the motions. Does that mean is he not controlling his actions? How is this working?
So the space turrets do most of the job. He just kind of sits there and
then what's the
watches
point if the machines are able to just do it, why don't the machines do it? Why does he have to be in there?
I would think it's... How do I put this? There are jobs out there where the person's purpose is to just monitor and report. And his job has probably become something more along those lines. Like if the turrets failed, he could step in and still take down all the bugs.
So he is literally going through the motions.
Literally. Like, it's not even him going through the motions.
This is not even a figurative thing going on here. He is literally going through the motions. And it's a day in, day out, go through the motions. Remembering past glories that now feel automatic.
Exactly.
And he wants a life change.
He needs it. He's begging for it. He doesn't really know that. I mean, he gets paid while
the planet gets attacked by space alien bugs.
All the time.
That I misheard as ducks.
Although I'm really wishing I had made it ducks. Space alien ducks sounds way more exciting. Bursting
you
out
know
of the
what?
Ground.
Why not? We should go for it.
It turns out the big life changes. He sees an ad in between the Space Rockers episode.
And then he has a happy little space farm with the pond of space ducks.
He becomes a space duck.
And then he meets the woman of his dreams.
Farmer.
Because that's
of
what
course.
You like. And there is this big version of a white picket fence. So we have to create a life change to propel the story. We need to help him get out of his rut, essentially. Because he is in a real, true rut. What do you imagine that can be? I mean, I don't want to go like, oh, there's been an asteroid. You know, there's an asteroid problem. That planet is moving through their version of the asteroid belt of their solar system, which actually would be very devastating. Maybe that's not a good idea. That would cause a lot of damage. That also cause a lot of turmoil. What if their planet has a very long rotation around the sun and every like 12 to 15 years, whatever, they pass through a section of space that has a lot of asteroids that rain down terror onto the planet?
This is the incident that pushes him to change his life? Is the falling asteroids?
What if his suit gets damaged?
And he's like stuck in the wilderness.
What's his name?
Tom.
His name's Tom.
Tom.
Did he just make that up?
I made that name up. No, first I made the whole name up. I made up the name Tom. It was me. Okay. Asteroids, super exciting. Makes a lot of sense being in space. Planets and asteroids, they're all over the place. They hit each other a lot. There's a lot of bumping going on. Maybe we try something a little less spacey. Does he stay on the planet? You're right. We're trying to come up with an incident.
Well, it could be a fluke accident, or their planet could be designed so that they have these shields, but these aliens, like for instance, their atmosphere cannot be quite like ours. And what if they live in one of those like glass bubble shields around their planet to protect their planet so that they can have like an artificial, what if this planet has been terraformed? And so they have not a glass, but kind of like a shield around the planet so that it creates an atmosphere. So that's how the planet was able to be terraformed. And this was like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds centuries ago in his past. So this has been formed. And usually the shield helps protect from asteroids and space debris. But because they're being attacked by these aliens have learned how to break through the shield. And as a consequence, there's now little holes in the shield that's been developing. And the planet has moved through a section of space where there is just floating space rock, and some of these space rocks has gone through the hole. And so you have Tom, because he named him that. Well, we have Tom.
Why did that sound so passive aggressive? Do you have a problem with the name Tom? I was like,
I do not
what's
have
wrong
a problem
with the name
with Tom,
Sarah?
No, I do not. So we have Tom, and he's wearing his spacesuit, and he's going through the motions, as stated previously. A bug here, a bug there. The shimmering sky.
Yeah, the last thing someone says about asteroids plummeting to Earth is shimmering, Sarah. I guess the sky does kind of shimmer, though, a little bit when asteroids are falling
this
down.
This is a shield. It shimmers.
It's a
shimmering
that's
shield.
True.
It's a shimmering shield.
A good point. It's the shield that shimmers. I like that.
Unbeknownst to Tom, as he whacks one bug life after another, swiping off the guts that do not, these are not duck guts, these are bug guts, from his shield. Unbeknownst to him, he's used to the sky shimmering. It's just a natural occurrence. He's grown up with it all his life. But what he didn't realize was that along with the shimmering of the shield was sparks of electricity as a new wave of bugs started crashing through the shield. And as he looked up, realizing the danger he was in, but unable to do anything because his robot armor was in full control, he's just there going through the motion in a complete daze of horror struck, debating whether or not he should turn off his suit. Because as he looked up, he noticed that a part of the shield was starting to fracture. He saw spaceships fly up, trying to repair the damage, trying to avoid the alien life. But it was too late, as space rocks slipped through the crack and plummeted down to where he was. There, I'll leave it there.
Okay. Well, that was a good pick. I have a really hard time seeing anything but space ducks now and all the imagery that you just painted. Literally in every instance, I literally saw giant, terrifying ducks flying around, breaking through the shields and destroying the planet. It was terrifying.
Robot ducks. With mechanical feathers.
He discovers that maybe what happens is the shields are breaking. And this is an expedition job. They see that the cracks are open in the shield. They have to go repair them. But because these, whether they're bugs or ducks, nobody knows. you have to go up and you got to fight these guys because they're flying up there and they're just decimating the shield generators. And I kind of see these shield generators as these massive, like, floating towers in the sky. And you can see them like all over from the colony. If you get on the highest tower in the colony, you look up, you see these like little like black silvery lines in the distance, and they're all evenly spaced apart from each other. And a stream of light kind of sprays out from each one, and then it spreads out into the sky where you see that shimmer you're talking about. Here's the twist. Here's where things change, because this whole time as he's flying up, given, you have to understand, Tom spends most of his time
Is he flying up or is he on the ground? Because he's watching the spaceships fly up, try to stop this.
I jump scenes. That was just painting an image. He's kind of rolling back a bit. He's actually getting on a ship now because they're going up to attack.
Ooh.
Sorry.
So he is now deciding to join the fight.
Okay, so I'm really not... I got to speak things in order. you're catching me in all my broken... I'm leaving points out. Okay, I'll stop jumping around. So chronologically...
Yes.
The space ducks are going to attack the shield jet. They're just space ducks now. I don't even know what they were before. Space ducks are attacking the shield generators. He's getting on a ship to go defend the space generators. So he's now flying up to attack them. But as this is happening, an asteroid cracks through the shield, as you were describing. And something amazing happens. Because as he looks up, and his visor, of course, has magnifying telescope goggles on top, cameras or whatever. And he looks up at one, seeing it break through the shield. And, you know, on a whim, he's like, I wonder what that looks like as soon as it gets through the shield. So he zooms in on it and he zooms in and he zooms in. And the asteroid gets bigger and bigger. All the people that knows we're not using the proper astronomical terms for these things is just slaughtering us now in our brains.
You know, and the sad thing too is I actually did spend an entire afternoon studying the difference between asteroid and meteor and all that stuff. And do I remember all of it? No.
I'm pretty sure when a rock hits atmosphere, well, okay, is it still so called like an space asteroid? Rock?
No, it's a meteor. I think it becomes a meteor.
I think it's an asteroid.
It's an asteroid in space, but then it becomes a meteor. So once it enters Earth atmosphere, I think it becomes a meteor.
It becomes a meteor. And then when it hits the ground, it's a meteorite.
Yes.
Ah, okay. See, guys, we're not totally lost.
We know space stuff.
We do know space stuff.
Confused and we mix it up a little bit, but it's in our brain somewhere.
So as he's flying up and he zooms in, he sees the asteroid coming in. It's still hot and boiling on the surface, crackling away as it enters the atmosphere. And he zooms in and he sees something. That's strange. That doesn't look like a rock formation. He zooms in again. And he zooms in closer and he sees a building on the asteroid. And he zooms in again and he sees a small space duck family sitting at the dinner table through the window.
Are you serious?
Eating dinner. And of course, they're angry. Who in their right minds brought this planet with its shield that somehow, for some reason, breaks us through? And he sees the space ducks coming in. It doesn't have to be. I was painting a weird image of a space duck family eating at a dinner table, and they're being interrupted because they're literally crashing into the planet. But in reality, what it is like maybe the space ducks live inside of the asteroid. Now meteor, as it comes in, and they, as the asteroid breaks apart, the space ducks fly out of it. And that's where we find out that all the space ducks live, get it? Because they're space ducks. They live in space and they're coming down to the planet. And that's why they never end. They're always coming. And now you may ask, okay, Robbie, fine. I see that's your inciting incident. What lifestyle does he decide to become? Or what lifestyle does he now change? Why does he change? He decides he wants to learn more about aliens. And he becomes xenologist.
I was thinking more like, see, I like the idea of his suit getting damaged and him having to rise above that. See, because I never imagined him going up to the tower. I kind of imagined him being stuck on the ground, having to witness things from that angle, and being in a position where suddenly, because I can see like, okay, so you said how in the past, these warriors who fought off the bug, the alien bugs, were heralded and celebrated, and they had glory and honor every time they'd come back to the city. And that has been lost, and he never got that in his generation. And I like the idea that his armor gets destroyed, or not destroyed, but the paro mechanism that controls his movement gets damaged through fragments of meteorite that rips through his... it doesn't rip through because he'd be dead if that was the case. It protects him, but it affects the mechanics. And I like the idea that he then has to take over his suit. And in the process of that, do I fight? Do I control? You know, like now he's had a sense of control. I mean, the control forced upon him has now been removed. And he's now in a position to fully take control of his life.
I think it would be an interesting image if, you know, during that scene when he's walking back home, we see him trudge through the village, stomp, stomp, stomp. We see how everything in life there is automated. So like the gardens are being managed by robots. Food is being cooked by robots. Everything is being done by robots. And I think that would be a good setup into this point that you're making right now, because when the automated component breaks, he is now forced to take full control, and there's no longer this simulated experience of accomplishment. And he, for the first time, is going out and slaying the bugs himself. So is that kind of the direction you're thinking of? That his whole life has been automated at this point, and now this is the first point where it's no longer automated?
It almost sounds like everyone's life at this point has been automated. What if, I like the idea that these bugs are more than just bugs, that there's some intelligence behind them, some planning, some strategy. Maybe you should finish your thought, because before I said where I was going to go.
Well, on that thought, I did think, actually, if these space ducks, not letting that go, goes up, they actually, how do I put this? They go up into space and they lay their eggs on these asteroids, and then they come back to Earth or the planet. And when the force field went up, it broke their life cycle.
Oh, so they're trying to reclaim.
Yeah.
They're dying off. So there's been centuries of them fighting off these aliens. So do they just have a really long lifespan?
Well, in the premise, in the prompt, it was only stated to be years. Okay. Yeah, I would say it's been maybe like 10 years max, which is plenty of time. Not enough time to like destroy a species, but enough time to really...
For them to recalculate.
Some problems.
So at what point, though, did they have these exoskeletons? Because they would not have had these the full 10 years. Is this something that... Okay, now it sounds like maybe he had a period of time where he might have been, or maybe he's a new recruit. I don't know.
It's a colony on a planet.
Yeah.
So they could have all just arrived this way prepackaged. Meaning when they got to the planet and they set up all the generators and they set up the colony, I mean, he just had his exosuit at the get-go. He was hired for the job.
But the colony's been there for a while. And they've been... Okay, I think we're like on different pages, because I thought you said that they've been... That there was a time where these bug hunters were celebrated until the robotics came in. So that would therefore...
That is the point. In either case, and you're right, that is...
And 10 years is not long enough for that.
I mean, it could have been the first 5 years they were exosuits, and then the last 5 years
they've been programmed.
They got programmed
for
they got
better an efficiency.
Yeah,
that'd be really hard though to experience the suits having full power or being able to control the movements, and then having that stripped away from you in order to increase efficiency.
Well, I mean, you see that in our own lives, where more and more parts and portions of our personal lives here, even on Earth, are becoming automated through our cell phones and also through kind of societal changes as well.
So then it becomes like the battle between the advancement of technology has its benefits, but at what cost?
Right.
What are we losing in the process? So what has he lost? And I like the idea maybe that he finds his humanity again.
I think it's almost poetic to the point of they would never have noticed that they were literally committing genocide against maybe a semi-intelligent space duck. And they didn't realize that because they put the shield around the planet, they were killing the space ducks. And it's the day his automation fails that he really sees what's going on. because he never would have looked up before. He never would have seen what was happening had that automation been there, because he would have had his Space Rockers show that he was watching on, which was taking care of everything for him.
And I would not be surprised if there are politicians and those in charge who are fully aware of what's going on, but are shielding people, like literally shielding people from what is happening, that this alien life, their life cycle has been disrupted, and they are now fighting back to reclaim their rights to the planet. So it's become a battle between life forms battling for the planet. And so at this point in the story, where we've brought it to, the aliens have found a way to crack, like they've only been cracking through, like through the shields, but they haven't been able to permanently create holes. It's like momentary, or like more momentary slippage that they can create, but not big enough to create a hole where they can send their asteroids down to repopulate. And so for the last several years, however long it's been, they've been fighting these slippage aliens who have been testing the shields and trying to take over, you know, disrupt humanity, essentially. And now we have come to the day where they have managed to create a hole big enough for these asteroids to come through. Meanwhile, our hero is in a quandary, and he's been in a bit of a rut.
Well, he's still going through all the motions. So he sees what's happening to this alien species. That's his inciting incident. And then probably the new lifestyle change is either fighting against the man, choosing to take on and maybe save this species. So the turning point is, or the new life change is, you know, I'm going to no longer fight, but save these aliens. And then who knows, maybe he goes on, maybe he becomes a rebel and starts destroying all the automated systems, not just on this colony, but wherever he can find them, trying to save humanity from the deadly life of automation.
I like the idea of him becoming a rebel, taking back control of his suit and leading up a force and army.
In the end, there's kind of a lot of different directions in the context of, you know, telling a story about a turning point and really a different way of living. My thought would be he would see this whole incident. And I love the automation, going against automation and him fighting that. It would be interesting to know, okay, what's the next step? What is he going to go and fight against it? Is he going to go and become a xenologist and start studying aliens? Or perhaps he decides to escape to a new planet where nothing's automated. And, you know, there are planets out there that automation is banned. Like, it's not that they're without technology. It's just there's a very limited degree of how technology participates in his life. And so he gets on the next ship out and decides to settle with all of his savings on a new world. And the story is actually him learning how to do things himself, cooking for the first time, talking to a person where relationships aren't automatically set up through these dating regulation systems that are run by AI. You know, he has to do everything. And I think that'd be an interesting story. It's him discovering how to do things all himself again, or whatever. Obviously, we'd have to retroactively go back and change some things about the premise that I'd set up, but I think that's totally fine. You know, where everything in life is automated, I think is kind of fascinating. Anyway, yeah, we could leave that up to you guys, the audience, you know.
As for me, I like Warrior Tom leading an army against the aliens, sweat dripping down his brow as he stares up, battling one life form after another to reclaim their home as he gets taken over. No, just kidding.
No, he gets taken over. He goes full Borg on us and he's just being taken over by the automated system.
No, I want him to be a hero. I do.
He sounds like a heroic guy. I mean, he's been fighting space crawlers, bugs, ducks for the last 10 years. So it takes guts to do that.
I know. I feel like a little mixed, because I'm like, it's so sad that these aliens have been disrupted. I'm like, I can see their point, but I can see our point for wanting to survive as well. So who survives in the end? And him becoming a hero means that these alien life forms cannot then survive. And I'm like, that's kind of sad. Maybe that's one thing he learns. He learns how mankind can coexist with these aliens, and they no longer have to fight anymore.
Comes
and
everything a politician. The whole story is him becoming elected.
No.
To become mayor in the city.
No.
It's a political story now. And he's just trying to get votes from all the people.
No politics in Storks. It's sad.
Guys, thanks for joining us on this episode. What lifestyle change do you think he should have taken? Appreciate you guys for sticking around. And yeah, we really appreciate you. Thanks for joining us on the Space Duck adventure as well.
Space Ducks in space. I think how many times have we said that now? In space.
In space.
Now we have ducks in space, leprechauns in space, the other thing in space.
So
it's
many
just nice.
Space
is just a nice place.
Space, it's true. A nice place. It's a lovely place. Well, we know what the name of the episode is.
Space Ducks.
Space Ducks.
Creators Playbook is a Talaya Studios production. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at contact@creatorsplaybook.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We cannot wait to see what you make.
He hated crawler guts. They stuck to all unseemly places.
Guts. You said guts and I heard ducks.
You heard, oh, he hated crawler ducks. Oh my gosh. Sarah.
And then I got confused and I stopped listening. I'm like, why is he cleaning ducks? But he was cleaning his guts off his visor. Okay.
He hated crawler ducks.
That is where
ducks.
My brain went. Okay.
Now it all makes sense.